Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey, thanks so much for joining me on Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. Tell you what, man, if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I'm here, I got you. That's what we do on Coach P's Perspective. You know, one of my ultimate goals here is I want to help you identify principles that you can apply in your journey to personal growth and success. And the bottom line is this. When you listen to these episodes, we want to provide you with a dose of strength that can help you take on life's most significant challenges and succeed. And if we're doing that, if you enjoy it, hey, I ask you to run over to Apple Podcasts real quick. Give us a 5-star review, maybe a short written review, and then share these podcasts. You know, you can share them out on social media. You can get the link and share these out. That's how we grow the podcast. That's how we spread the message. You know, and ultimately, we want to positively impact you as a person, your home, your community, this nation, and the world. So again, thanks for jumping on Coach P's Perspective. And let's get ready for today's episode. All right. Well, hey, welcome to today's episode of Coach P's Perspective. I am pumped to have Coach Jessica Medina with us. So Coach Jessica Medina was a phenomenal wrestler. I'm going to go through just a little bit of her bio because it's a great bio. I mean, there's a lot of stuff we could add in here. But so she is currently the National Women's Development Coach for USA Wrestling, a former head wrestling coach in college. All right. And that was Ferrum College, I believe. Is that right, Coach?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. And now getting into just a little bit of her wrestling. Okay, she was a national team member, world team member, 3-time U.S. Open champion. So if you want to just look up and just Google Jessica Medina wrestling, you're going to find all kinds of information out there. And women's wrestling is growing enormous in the USA, worldwide. I'm a huge proponent. I coach a men's and women's wrestling program. And Coach Medina, you are I would say a legend in the sport of wrestling and women's wrestling, and a guide for so many young ladies right now at the highest levels, and then for those who are just beginning to look up to. So thank you so much for jumping on the podcast today.
Thanks for all the kind words in the intro.
Yeah, you bet. I know you're super humble, but all those things are true. So now let's start here. I want to kind of go back to the genesis. Tell me a little bit about how any other sports that you played, but how you got into sports, and then specifically how you found wrestling.
Yeah. So I had been thrown into kind of recreational sports by the time I was 6 years old. I'm the eldest of 3 sisters. So I was a pretty active kid. I wanted to try everything at least once, and my mom said I was a pretty busy kid to keep up, so I did everything from gymnastics to softball to basketball to cross country, track. So I was just kind of that kid who's like, I want to try that. And then as I got older, it was I want to be in band. I want to join this club. And so I was a really just curious kid. And when I was really focused on something, I was all in. So it wasn't until I was a junior in high school that I had stumbled upon wrestling. And it was not even for the fact that I'd never watched a high school or middle school wrestling match. I had no clue what wrestling was. It was the fact that one of my teammates on the cross country team was like, hey, he's like, you should go out for wrestling. He's like, the Hell Week is so hard. He's like, you would love it. And I'm like, yeah, like, I'm like, that sounds great. And not knowing anything about what that entails, you know, only hearing that like in the dynamics of football. So to me, I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. I want to just see if I can try out and for that Hell Week. And so, I had been running cross country my freshman sophomore year and running track in the spring season. So I didn't really have like that middle sport. So I was like, yeah, I'd love to try something in between. So I went out and I was in great shape, awesome shape. And the coach was like, why do you want to wrestle? And I was like, why not? That's my mentality. Why not? It wasn't because I had anyone in my family that wrestled or my friends were on the team. I was just like, why not? And why can't I have a chance? So it was a little challenge joining. At first, he was really hesitant. So I had our athletic director at the time. He was my cross country coach my freshman year. So he attested to my work ethic and just like knowing my character, like, hey, I want a chance to try out. So I end up showing up to the wrestling room, not knowing what to expect. All I can say is I ran as hard as I could when we were outside. I was in great physical shape. So I did all the conditioning as hard as I could. But I remember the first day when everyone was doing stance of motion and the coach was like, sprawl. I was like, what is happening in here? I'm like, what is this? Why is everyone hitting the floor? And they'd be like, shot. And I'm like, it just blew my mind that I was like, what did I get myself into? I have no clue what I'm doing. And so luckily again, like since I had done gymnastics, I could do the tumbling, I could do all the conditioning. And honestly, it was a hard week of just, hey, just go for it. You don't know anything about wrestling, but let's see, you know, where you stand. So after a week, I was like, I kind of patted myself on the back, like, good, I made this week. I felt pretty good about it. And then the coach was like really impressed. And I was like, man, I can't quit now. I'm like, I might as well just finish the season. And so that ended up being my mentality the rest of the way, because I ended up saying, you know, I ended up coming to the point of my senior year, well, I'm good with high school sports. And my coach was like, well, why don't you wrestle in college? And I'm like, okay. And then after that, same thing. So the rest was history after that 1 week.
Yeah. Now tell me, where was your high school located? And then let's jump into your college career.
Yeah. So my high school, I went to Diamond Ranch High School in Pomona, California. So I'm a SoCal girl. And at the time, girls wrestling was still growing. It wasn't sanctioned yet, but there were definitely a lot of girls like me wrestling on their boys team. And then sometimes I'd come across other girls who were wrestling on an all girls team. And that's the first time I'd seen that. I'm like, there's other girls and there's full wrestling girls wrestling teams. And so the thought of wrestling in college had never really surfaced my mind, or the fact that I would want to leave my home state, because I had applied in-state. And so my college coach encouraged me to wrestle in college, and he's like, you're just getting started. I think that you have a future in wrestling. And so I fell in love with the sport immediately. So the fact that someone was giving me an opportunity to continue in wrestling, I jumped on it last minute, sent my application in, talked to the coach, and just never visited the school. I showed up from Southern California to, I flew into Knoxville, Tennessee, had future teammates I never met pick me up, and I'm in Southern Kentucky. So imagine just, I hadn't turned 18, so a 17-year-old getting on a plane, packing up my stuff, flying to a part of the country I'd never been, a campus I never visited, and I'm just hoping this all works out. It was literally a huge step of faith for me to wrestle in college. And that's the first time I was on an all women's team. And so that was new for me, cause I loved being on my boys team. I love being part of the family. My brother's on that team. So it was a huge transition. But I was really competitive when I got there. I was like, I'm not going to be friends with any of the women around my weight until like I have my spot. I was like, I came all the way here from California, and I'd sit in the cafeteria by myself. I wouldn't sit. People would be like, why aren't you sitting with any of like the wrestlers? And I'm like, I can't until I have my spot. I was like, I'm all business. So it was really just an interesting start, you know, showing up to school. And it was awesome. Just like any freshman away from home, I got homesick and had a really hard time pushing through the season, but between making friends, just I ran track and I was wrestling and I was making sure I'm on top of my grades because I was there on scholarship. I really pushed through after that freshman year, and I had a really good freshman year. I ended up second runner up. And then as the years continued on, I really, really enjoyed the team. I enjoyed being on a women's team. I enjoyed the culture, meeting different people from all over the country. And so it got a little easier to go back to school. And in that time, like, I ended up making a junior world team. I got to travel to Guatemala and take a bronze medal. And that was my first time kind of introduced to USA Wrestling. And so that whole world of senior level wrestling, college wrestling was all still really new to me, but whatever opportunities were there, I just jumped right in. And then I went on to just be I was a three-time finalist for WCWA. And, my senior year, we won the team title by 1 point, finished MVP, and graduated. So it was, I think, the best you could ask for as a senior in your final season. And that's probably one of my favorite memories. So I wouldn't trade any of those years in Kentucky. I went to University of the Cumberlands, and it was just an awesome time.
Yeah, that's awesome. And California is, I would say, one of the leading states in women's wrestling. I mean, there's so many phenomenal wrestlers that come out of California, and it's just grown and grown and grown. So, you were kind of on the base of that, really getting it going. So in college, you said, you were, of course, multi-time All-American, finalist, but you also stayed on top of your grades, did those type of things. Tell me what was some of the structure or some of the things that you were able to do as a student athlete to allow you to achieve success while you're in college?
Yeah, I think the biggest determinant was reminding myself the sacrifices I was making, because that really guided my days. I was like, okay, so you're here. What are you wanting to accomplish? And I was up at either 5:30 or 6 a.m., depending on what time class was. I was going out for a run, going to class, making sure if I needed to be at a study hall, I'm at study hall. I would attend. Sometimes I would go to the guys' practice. I would go to the women's practice. And then again, homework at night. So for me, like, those two things, I'm like, one, I'm here for my education, and two, I'm here to wrestle. So I started with those base things. And then the extracurricular activities, like joining a study or a club or making new friends outside of wrestling, came later as those fit in. But again, knowing like these are my two priorities, so I'm going to start here and build on that, really helped me stay focused and consistent. And I was just that girl, like if class got canceled for some reason, I immediately was ready to go work out and then shower and be back for the next class. So, and then we had an absence policy, so that I did not miss class unless it was for a wrestling tournament. So,
yeah, so I was basically the same way. When I very first went to college my freshman year, I can't say that I went in academic minded. I was there to wrestle. And, but I would, that semester, that first year, I just made up my mind, you know what, if I got to be here, I might as well learn and enjoy it. And then I began to do that, right? And really get into the academic side, and was fortunate enough to be an academic All-American as well. But I would say that at that time, and then even now as an adult, it's weird because you think, okay, like you're so busy, and people say like college sports, it's your life, right? It's your business. You're so busy, you don't feel like you can do anything else. But I think a lot of times when you have that high structure, you're almost able to get more accomplished. You know, it's the times when, like, let's say, during a COVID-19 quarantine, when people don't have structure, then you're kind of a little lost, and it's hard to, it's hard to find that and get things accomplished. So I think even as an adult, especially ex-athletes, sometimes you get out and like, okay, now what do I do? And you have to go back and, okay, when I was really successful, what were the structures that were in place that allowed me to succeed? And then there's a lot of wrestlers and coaches that listen to this. So this will give them an idea of what it's going to be like and what they're going to need to do whenever they get into college, or if they get to go to that level and compete, to succeed. Now, take me from you finished wrestling in college, how did you jump levels to the world team and get involved with the senior level wrestling?
Yeah, so my senior year, with women's wrestling, especially collegiate, there's a lot of opportunities to wrestle postseason in USA Wrestling events. And so my coach was really adamant about getting us to those tournaments. And I had qualified my senior year for my first Olympic trials. And I was still in Kentucky and had no clue, you know, what all that entails. But, you know, the big question when you graduate is, what are you going to do next? And man, that question drove me nuts. So here I am, I'm qualified for the Olympic trials and I'm trying to figure out, like, where am I going to train? What am I going to do moving forward? So I ended up staying back. I finished up, I had a class online to finish up. So I ended up staying back and I spent the whole summer. I didn't let anyone rush me or pressure me. I spent the whole summer really asking mentors, having people pray for me, having conversations like, I don't feel like I have an answer yet and I don't want to be pressured. But I laid out the pros and cons of like all my options and some of them were like wrestling orientated and the other ones were, okay, I have a degree. Do I want to go out in the workplace and start transitioning? So it was kind of a fork in the road and I spent the whole summer really thinking about it and also training for Olympic trials. And so I had gone out to the Olympic Training Center for a camp and, you know, it's the big fish in a little pond type situation. I'm a senior national champ. And then I go out there and wrestle with these senior level women at a camp. And man, my eyes were huge. I'm like, whoa, this is amazing to see this level of wrestling and these women getting ready for Olympic trials, these veterans in the sport. And I had spent a couple weeks there and I did get my butt kicked quite a bit, but I was also hanging pretty good in the room. And some of people, the role models, like I looked up to when I was younger, were in that room and I'm like rubbing elbows with them and grinding and battling it out. And as tough as it was in that room, I was like, this is where I need to be. Like, this is where I want to go. And, again, I didn't think about wrestling after college and stumbled upon this opportunity to go out to the training center. And I had just made a decision, like, this is where I'm supposed to be next. And I'm like, I'll wrestle one more quad and see what that looks like. So, I had put my application into the Olympic Training Center. Terry Steiner had known me from before. But that was the first time that we had conversation about me coming out there. And so I got accepted. And by August of 2008, I moved out to the Olympic Training Center and officially started my senior career.
Nice. Now, who were some of your, because I believe it's important for younger athletes to have icons, heroes, people they look up to. And it's funny because I'll go do wrestling camps all around and I'll ask athletes, I'll say, okay, now, who can tell me who Jordan Burroughs is? Who can tell me who John Smith is? Who Kel Sanderson is? And a lot of the kids won't know. And they're like, okay, who's LeBron James? And everybody will raise their hands. I'm like, all right, man, we got to be a student of our sport. Now, especially for women's wrestling, for a lot of these girls who are just starting out, you know, they may not know who the legends are in women's wrestling. So for you, as you were at this point, right, getting ready to compete on a senior level, who were some of those ladies that you looked up to?
Yeah, I'll say first, Takara Montgomery. She was part of our first Olympic team at 72 kilos. And she actually was my coach at University of the Cumberlands. And so she was the first person who I was like, wow. I'm like, I have an Olympian as a coach and just admired her so much. She actually really, I looked up to her so much. I had taken some of the values that she had throughout my college career and had said, if that's what she did, that's what I'm going to do. So she had a huge impact on me. I would say Clarissa Chun, and it's crazy because now we work together. But at the time, you know, I had seen Clarissa Chun and, you know, she had made the 2008 team and I was excited to work with her. And then I would say Christy Davis, who was Christy, what was her maiden? Gosh, I can't remember her maiden name. Christy Davis and Patricia Miranda was a big one. She was 48 kilos. And I'm like, I want to win a Olympic medal like Patricia Miranda. So those were some women that actually were still competing by the time I got to the training center too. So it was, I was in awe because I'm like, wow, I'm here with some of the people that I aspire to be like wrestling at the same time. So that was really cool.
Yeah. So Christy, her husband Link, is one of my good friends, Link Davis. And so we both grew up in Oklahoma, probably 45 minutes apart. Okay. Link was a little bit, yeah, he's a little bit older than I am. And so he was always kind of like one of my heroes when I was growing up. I always watch him. And when I very first came into college, he was just graduating college, and we got to wrestle in a couple of the same opens together. And anyway, yeah, so I try to keep in touch with them. Great people, great family. And Christy is an absolute legend in the sport, right?
So yeah.
I just looked it up real quick. You know, she got inducted to the National Hall of Fame, and they're down there at Emmanuel College. But anyway, so great, great people there. Now, all the competing you got to do on the senior level, what was probably your favorite trip or the best place you got to go and wrestle, and why does it stand out?
I would say my first year we had gone to Russia, to Moscow. We'd gone to their Olympic Training Center, and it was my first training international camp. We had a competition, but it was the first time I was going out of the country to train long-term and compete. And so I loved that trip because my roommate at the time, Elena Pereshkova, she's Russian. So it was so cool to go to a country where they, you know, wrestling is the sport, you know, it's so much embedded in their culture. And then to have my roommate translate to really tell us like why they do things the way they do, why they eat breakfast at this time, what are the cultural differences? How do they view wrestling? How do they train their athletes? Like, it was so cool to have an insight on Russian wrestling and to be in Russia. And at the time, we didn't have any cell service where we were training. So, and back then too, it was not easy to get Wi-Fi. So it was really cool. I felt like almost like a Rocky movie, but we were like out in the middle of nowhere at their training center, no service, just our team, training three times a day, and just really getting embedded in the Russian culture. And like, they do things like go for a morning walk, and then their first practice isn't until like 11 a.m. And even like to this day, Russian breakfast is my favorite. And just how like they don't drink coffee after a certain hour. They don't, you know, like all these things, like little things to me, and I'm like, wow, this is so different. And the culture is so different. And on top of that, I'm not just there visiting as a tourist. I'm there within the wrestling community and getting this really cool snapshot that is really specific to what I'm doing and how I can connect to it. So I would say that's my favorite trip.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because so many athletes, I mean, the competing is great, right? We love to compete and getting results, those type of things. But so many athletes that I've coached or people I've interviewed, things like that, when you talk about their careers, it's often not like, hey, I won this championship or that championship. It's the experiences. You know, it was getting to travel with teammates, staying in hotels, going to another country and learning the culture, those type of things that are so invaluable, you know, to our lives overall. So yeah, let me ask you this. Because I'm constantly recruiting female wrestlers for our girls team, but just for anyone out there maybe considering it, and I have two daughters of my own too that are younger, but why should girls wrestle? Like, what are a couple of the things that, because I know you're working with girls at all different levels and you're helping to develop them. What are a couple of the things that it can do for their life?
Yeah. You know, I would say first off, if I were convincing either, let's say a female who is athletic, I'd be like, first of all, there's no cuts on the team. So, you know, you're automatically a part of a family. And really, effort is probably the biggest thing that's appreciated, right? Not even so much, of course, everyone strives to be the best in every sport, but if you have an attitude to come in and work hard, you're going to be included in a group of individuals who have the same goal as you. So I think that's really cool, because when you join other sports, it's like, if you try out and you don't make the team, you're out, you know, and it's solely based on your skill. But wrestling is welcoming in the sense of, like, you get in there, it can be someone who's been wrestling for, you know, 7-8 years, and also someone who's never wrestled a day, and you all get to be in the same room and learn together. So I think that takes the pressure off of feeling like, I don't know anything about wrestling, or I've never wrestled before. It's okay. There's beginners in, you know, any room, and you'll learn. So I think that's a really cool part of wrestling. I would say it definitely gives you confidence as far as just knowing, hey, this sport requires me to be more disciplined, to put my best effort in, to test myself every day. And it, like, those aren't easy things to do, to continually do every day, especially as a young female. And you get this opportunity to do it in athletics that later on in life, it just, or even not later on in life, like, you'll probably walk on campus just feeling a lot better and more confident about yourself. Like, man, I challenge myself every day in a room. And if you're on a boys team, that's a, you know, that gives even more confidence of, like, yeah, I can hang with my peers. Doesn't matter, male or female. And if you can do that in the wrestling room, you can do that anywhere outside of the wrestling room, on campus, in a job, you know, amongst peers. So I would say confidence is a big one. And overall, like, the worst case scenario, I go back to the, like, why not? The worst case scenario is you try it and you don't like it. The best case is you try it and you completely fall in love. So I think just trying something new couldn't hurt.
Yeah. Excellent. Awesome. So as wrestlers, one of the beautiful things about the sport of wrestling is, like, there's no final point. Now, there might be a point where your career ends, but, like, you never get so good that you stop growing, right? It's just a challenge constantly, trying to get better. Now, you're now in the coaching realm, and coaching is the exact same way. You think you get it a little bit figured out, and then there's a whole another challenge, right? So we're constantly trying to grow as coaches. Tell me about how you got into coaching, and then a couple of the things that you do to for personal growth, or to allow yourself to become a better coach all the time.
Yeah. So for me, I retired in 2016 from the senior level stage. And so I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And along the way, people towards the end of my career, they're like, you're going to be such a great coach. And I'm like, that's great, because I'm not going to coach. I had my degree in business and public health, and my intentions were to get my master's in business. So I was looking for an MBA program and just trying to figure out, like, okay, let me just get back in the groove of things. And, you know, it's really interesting. I think it's a combination of things. Like, one, I feel like that was God's plan for me. And two, I felt like wrestling was like, I'm not going to let you go. Like, sucked me back in, because I tried my absolute hardest to veer from the path of coaching. And the more people would tell me that I'd be a great coach, I was like, I'm good. Like, I was like, I don't think so. And then I had an opportunity to coach at Beat the Streets Philly. And that was like a really minimal 3-month spring freestyle season that I was like, okay, I can commit to that. Like, I can still work, and or I can go to school full time and just, you know, coach in the season. And so after 3 months, they were restructuring the program at the time, and it wasn't going to allow me to continue coaching until the following spring. And it kind of hit me, like, wait a minute. I'm like, do I really want to do this? Like, do I want to continue with women's wrestling? Because if I do, you know, I get to work with these athletes, but not only that, like, I can help push women's wrestling at an athletic level, but also as a female coach, I'm like, do I really want to commit to this? And so honestly, at that point, it was either like cut loose, get a job, or go into coaching, because that's the most stable thing, I would say, financially for women's wrestling and specifically the college realm. So I was like, okay, I'm in, I need to find a job. And it's funny kind of how I ended up at Ferrum, but overall it was the decision of like, wait a minute, how involved do I want to be in this sport? Do I want to be all in? Do I want to make this my career? Or do I just kind of want to be a part-time coach and maybe have some impact? And so that's where I decided like to really change paths and become a full-time coach. And I feel like my coaching career has been on hyperspeed, but I did spend all those years as a senior athlete training and really learning the craft, and I had so many resources. So really I was ready to just step into coaching, and that's kind of how it happened.
Yeah. So now, so you coach the college level and then you move up and now you're getting to coach, you know, nationally, right? You're getting to coach some of our most elite, and then down to our up and coming elite. So yeah. So what are the things that you are doing personally as a coach, to continue to have a growth mindset, to continue to become better and perfect your craft, right? The same way you did wrestling. How are you doing that as a coach? What are some of your tricks of the trade?
Yeah. So yeah, that growth mindset is huge. So it's crazy because if you think about it, within 3 years, I've coached at the club level and then college level. And then now at the national level, I'm working with the best of the best, all the way from 12 to our senior level athletes here in Colorado Springs. So for me, man, like you have to grow. If I don't, I'll fall behind, you know? And I think a big piece is like surrounding yourself with people who you either aim to mimic or be like, and constantly just asking them questions or just putting yourself around those groups. And I would say, you know, for me, just stepping into this role, being around Terry Steiner and Clarissa Chun, like you gotta grow or go. And I feel like for me, they're always challenging me. And that's what I did when I was an athlete. I'm like, I want to be like that person. So I need to be around them and I need to pick their brain and I need to learn from them and emulate those things that they're doing. And I would say, you know, another thing as a coach, I use this a lot when I first started, and I still do now, flip the script. That was a huge one for me. I'm like, my first season of being a head coach at a college was not easy. I didn't have an assistant. I didn't have like a ton of mentorship. So a lot of things happened that I was like, okay, like someone, you know, broke their ankle or someone else had something else happen. And I was just like, I'm like, okay, I don't even have another adult to talk to about this, like on my staff. So a lot of the times I had to tell myself to flip the script. I was like, where can I see a different perspective and how can I make this a positive one? And once I started doing that with myself, like anytime I got something that was like a barrier or a challenge, like I'd flip it. And then I'd start doing that with my athletes. And so like when my athletes had hard days, I would just in my head, I'm like, okay, how can I flip the script for them? How can I help them see a situation that might initially be negative or difficult and help them flip it and see the positives in it? And like that made such a huge difference, because a starter would get injured and be out like right before a match. And I'd say, well, you know what? It's a good thing it's happening right now. And two, you can actually help out with the team. Three, you can actually get your grades up. You can work on, like, it was so cool to start those things. So doing it as a coach is really important, because once you start talking like that language, you help your athletes do the same thing, and then they're able to hopefully solve their own problems. So I try to remind myself of that. And then, you know, overall I would say there's, you know, I went into coaching and I'm like, okay, I need mentorship, or wrestling coach 101. There's really like, there's definitely more information and educational pieces, but what I realized is like,
you've really got to make it your own. You really got to ask yourself what your coaching style is, who you are as a coach, as a leader, reflect on the coaches that you had and how does that impact you now, and figure out maybe that was a good thing that my coach taught me. And then actually, you know what? That wasn't really good. I don't know if I want to continue on with that and still learn from those people. Cause I look back and I say, you know what? I would have coached differently. I would have done these things differently, but I still respect that person. So how can I take the good things and powerful things and then mold them into my coaching style? Because as a young coach, like I get advice all the time, or I get, you know, new insight. And so I don't just blindly take it. I look at the concept and I'm like, how does that fit with me as a female, younger coach? Or how does that fit with me and my personality and my tendencies, or like how I express myself? How can I take that same concept and change it and relate to my athletes? Like, what do I want that to actually look like coming from Jessica Medina and not just, you know, a watered down version of somebody else? So I think those are probably the three things I try to remind myself constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are huge. I mean, you know, my podcast is Coach Pete's Perspective for a reason. Gaining that perspective, there's always different perspectives and different ways to look at things. And then taking adversity or an issue and flipping the script, right? To see like, hey, how can we switch this to a positive? How can we find the good in this? And then I would say, like, thinking back to when I was a younger coach, Tony Dungy's book, The Mentor Leader, like literally I was probably 4 years into my coaching career. I was a football coach, wrestling coach, track coach the first 3 years. I was coaching a lot, but a lot of people tend to coach how they were coached. And my dad's a National Hall of Fame wrestling coach, which is good. I had a phenomenal college coach, but, and I had some other coaches maybe I didn't agree with, right? So there's the good and the bad. But the thing is, like you just said, you have to be yourself. And when you're younger, I think maybe you don't have the confidence to do that, or you don't realize that. So you coach how you were coached. And some people never break away from that. They do that for 30 years and they're not being true to themselves. So I remember reading The Mentor Leader by Tony Dungy and it being so freeing, because here's a man who won the Super Bowl. He's laid back. He's very confident. And people that have been around him said, like, he just has this like it factor about him, but he's quiet. He's humble. He doesn't yell. He doesn't cuss. A lot of things that are opposite of like NFL football, yet he is highly successful. And when I read that, I realized like, I should be able to use my own personality, take the great things I learned from coaches and implement those. The things that I didn't want to do, don't implement those. And then to just be me, let my own personality that God gave me come out. So that is so huge and valuable information that you gave right there. I mean, that's great.
Yeah, Coach Dungy, he's actually been mentoring us, some of our national team staff a little bit. And every time the man opens his mouth, I'm like, this is such good stuff. And he's poised. He's really even keel. He's encouraging. And that's him. And I've learned from it. So yeah.
Yeah. No, that's perfect. And I often say, like, you know, when you think about your own coaching styles, I'm like a little Tony Dungy. I'm a little Mike Tyson. I'm a little bit of both, you know, but I try to make sure that I embrace that and just be true to who I am as a coach. Okay. So you're what I would call a high performer in many areas, right? You are a high performer as an athlete. You're a high performer as a coach. I like to study high performers. I think that's something we should do. What are just a few of the daily habits, routines that you do that you feel like allow you to maximize your potential and continue to grow?
Yeah. So, disclaimer, I actually hate routines, and I think it's my personality. It's really funny. So I think from my perspective, like when I was an athlete, having a routine and being very focused, I had wrestling really changed my tendencies and personality a little bit. But now that I've kind of circled back to like just me as a leader, I would say there's nothing that I do every single day, because that would drive me crazy being so monotonous. But I would say weekly, the things that I do are, I'd say the one thing I do is definitely every day is pray. I literally wake up and I'm like, please order my steps today so I don't screw it up. And I think that really centers why I come back to why I coach, right? Why, what's my purpose? And then I would say on a weekly basis, 3 to 4 times a week, I work out. I would say read or listen on audiobook. Sometimes I get burned down on a reading. So if I can't get myself to read, I'll just rent an audiobook or buy an audiobook on something like I'm really interested in. So like I did just buy a Tony Dungy book. I like nutrition. I like listening to podcasts. I know you do. And so I just try to find things like that I'm interested in and listen to it. And like, I don't like dedicate myself to one thing. I like switch it up all the time. So that way, like, I'm like, oh, I'm interested in 5 or 6 topics. If I'm tired of something else, I'll move on to it. I am not great at Spanish, so I downloaded an app. I bought Rosetta Stone, so I make sure I hit that up at least once a week. I usually call one person to reconnect with. And then this is probably a big, I would say, coming back to the structure, a big tendency thing for me is I'm very much like, I guess you'd call an obliger, where like I really need that structure. And like you said, most athletes need that structure. And so like even in a time right now, like even with work or even let's say like practice, like I was so used to having this set schedule. So I, knowing myself now, I schedule meetings or anything like speaking or podcast or interviews. And I make sure like I set those things up so that I'm constantly preparing for something or checking in with myself, because I know like if I don't do those things, I won't do it. So instead of like fighting my personality, I used to be like, man, I don't get up every single day super early and work out every day and da, da, da. And I'm like, those things are awesome. But I was like, I am a high performer. And I'm like, what is it that I need to do? And I'm like, oh, I need to schedule with people. So I schedule with people and it keeps me accountable. And instead of feeling like, oh man, I'm lazy or I'm not as productive as everyone else, I actually keep myself accountable by like, oh, you know what? This is a really uncomfortable thing. I'm going to do it. So then I have to study or think about it or reflect on it, do my homework, and it gets me motivated. So for those people who like are not like set a routine, stick to it, like that's totally fine. Like just pick those things every week. I try to do it every day. If not, like 3 to 4 times a week, I'm like, I need to pick something that's going to make me step out of my comfort zone, keep me accountable to other people, and make me stay on my A game. So I would say that's, especially during this quarantine time, has helped me a ton. And like that community of people keeping me accountable has helped me a lot. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's huge. I'm the same way with, I have to constantly have something that's making me step comfort zone and then just go for it. Right. So yeah. I don't know. I'm just now studying. I read a lot and varied, right? So the podcast I listen to, my favorite podcast is Brian Buffini, who is like the top real estate coach in the nation, but the guy's immaculate, just incredible self-growth. So I have to study all these various areas. I feel like it makes me more well-rounded and I'm just interested in them. But Enneagram, I haven't studied a ton on Enneagram, the whole personality type test, just now learning about it. A pastor friend of mine just wrote a book about Enneagram 3s and he sent me info. I actually did the test and I'm an Enneagram 3, so I just downloaded his book. But Enneagram 3s are achievers, and I think that you're probably an Enneagram 3 as well. You're probably an achiever because they're people that constantly have to like find that next thing to get them out of their comfort zone so they have something they're working toward, you know.
Awesome. That's me.
Yes.
I'm like, what's next?
Exactly. Which can almost kind of be a curse sometimes, and I guess I can only speak from my perspective, but I know for me, like I can study, I can work hard, I'll do all these things, I'll achieve something, and then immediately I'm just like, what's next? Some people do a much better job than I do of celebrating the victory and enjoying the moment, things like that. I'm literally kind of like, okay, like I got a book accomplished, or I got a book published, it hit number one, sweet, what's next? I'm like right on to the next thing, you know? So again, that can kind of be a curse. I think that you need to enjoy those victories as well as have something next.
Yeah, I agree with that. And to that point, like another thing that I think has helped me to get where I'm at is after I retired, I really have focused on like a balanced work life. And as an athlete, like I was insane. Like that was my life and I was dedicated to one thing. And so now since coming out of it, I realized like, I feel like I missed a decade of my family and celebrations and parties. And like, honestly, there's a time and a place, so I wouldn't change anything. But I think that I could have done a better job of like, take a break here and there, sightsee, go do something completely non-wrestling related. And so now as a coach, like, that's probably one of the things that's helped me, because I feel like in our, especially like in athletics, like go, 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 go. And you're going to become a better coach if you're like constantly learning, constantly putting in the hours, constantly burning the candle. And I just feel like for me, that is not sustainable. I'm not teaching my athletes how to have a balanced life. And on top of that, like, I think you can have it all, just not at once. I think you just got to shift when you're in the moment, shift your focus. And so I've forced myself to get to take other hobbies. Like, I've taken dance class. I started fishing, like pickleball, like things that I, like when I was an athlete, would have never even paid attention to. And now I'm like, this is so important for me to do. So when I step into the room or when it's time to work, like, I'm ready to go. But on top of that, like, I want to be a whole person. So if I don't do these other things, then I'm just going to be all wrestling. And to be honest, you're never going to be the best coach if you're all wrestling. You got to be more complete. So that's a huge one for me.
Yeah, no, that's big. And I even try to convey that to my athletes too. I wish when I was competing, I would have had other hobbies. I wish I would have done some of those other things to be a more complete person and just have some enjoyment time, you know, those type of things. But okay, so I know that your faith is very important to you. You and I are in a Bible study together, and a FCA Bible study that we do every Tuesday, which is awesome. So tell me, like, how do you integrate your faith in Jesus? How do you integrate that into your work life, into your coaching, and just, I guess, every aspect of life?
Yeah, I would say for me, I'm not like really... I'm not over aggressive. I think like for me, my experience was like, I can, you know, hey, believe in Jesus or read your Bible or this and that. Like, I really try to just speak truth from what I've learned and take that into whether I'm giving advice, whether I'm talking to myself. I just try to keep myself grounded. Like, any situation I'm in, I'm like, what does the Bible say about it? Okay, now let me understand that in this circumstance. And now let me understand the people I'm working with and how can I keep that rooted, but still help these people guide, you know, help guide them and not necessarily like push my faith on other people. Cause I, like, to me, I'm really sensitive about that. I'm just like, how can I just still know who I am and my foundation and operate like that in my answers and my conversations and my actions at work? And still have those conversations, you know, that are rooted in my faith. But I'm really sensitive to say, hey, like, is there an opportunity to share? Or is there an opportunity to just serve somebody? Like, you don't have to necessarily speak those words. How can I serve this person? How can I just be a testament of, like, I'm here to love you. I'm here to help you. I'm here to encourage you. Hey, that's what my faith's all about. I don't have to just quote or quote a scripture for you to know that. I'm showing you that this is what it's about. And, you know, I think the other thing is, like, there's a lot of like difficult conversations and topics that I like to talk about with people because I feel like they're not talked about. And I really feel like that is where I get to really share my faith or just like share truth with people and be really honest and be like, you know, hey, we're having a difficult conversation, but I think that it's great that we can do that together and build this relationship. And I think those relationships are where I can share my faith. I can just be honest. I can be upfront. And I think that speaks more volumes than, you know, wearing a shirt or doing a, you know, promotion of some sort. And I just remember, like, when I was an athlete, I remember I was like on this FCA audio, I think it was a CD at the time, with like Metcalf, Kelsey Campbell, Brandon Slay. And I was like, I'm on here? I'm like, this is so, I was like, this is so bizarre. And then I was like, I kind of like stood back and I'm like, you know, I don't know that I need to be like really out there and like proclaim it, like, I guess, straight on. I'm like, I want to live it. I just want to live it. And like those parts of me will come out and people will ask me about it and I'll share, but I never want to be that person that's like forcing, you know, my beliefs or not hearing someone out. I think here, like that's another thing lately with all of the issues within our country and within wrestling, like just taking the time to listen to someone really says a lot about what you think of them and valuing, at least taking the time to listen to them. So, and I think that that is a huge part of my faith. I'm like, hey, I'm here to listen. Like, I might not agree with you, but I want to give you the time and I want to hear what you have to say and I want to keep an open mind. But in the end, like, no matter what, I still want to pursue a journey and relationship, friendship with you, even if we think differently, and that's okay. Yeah. So that's a long-winded answer, but yeah.
Yeah, no, all those things sound like Jesus to me. You know, so Jesus to me, he simplified things, right? He just said like, hey, love God, love your neighbor like yourself. He lived out service. He literally just lived out service. He built relationships with everybody. You know, he rolled in with the tax collector that everybody hated and thought was like an immoral person and just said, hey, what's up? Let's go have dinner at your place, you know, and hung out with them. So all those things were like Jesus. He didn't walk around being like, guess what? I'm the son of God. Like he just literally like loved on people and built relationships with them and talked to them, you know? So I agree with you 100%. All those things just sound like exactly like what our Savior did, you know, on a daily basis. And then we make it super complicated a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. As we get ready to end here, I'm going to put you on the hot seat. Okay. I'm going to give you three categories. You get to decide which one you want to answer. And then just expound upon it as much as you want. All right. So you get to choose. You can either tell me about a hero, why they're your hero. Okay. What they've kind of done in your life. Tell me about a heartbreak and maybe what you learned from it. Or, you know, that could be like a match you lost or whatever. Or tell me about a highlight that really impacted you. So pick either a hero, a heartbreak, or a highlight, and then tell me about it.
Okay. I'll go heartbreak. So I would say the biggest heartbreak I had was 2016, April, when I had vied for a spot on the Olympic team as my last Olympic trials. I knew I was going to retire within that year or so. So when I didn't make that team, like I walked around like just heartbroken. And, you know, I think for me, it felt like something died that day. And a piece of me died, and it was so hard to move on from that. What ended up happening was I ended up being a clinician at an FCA camp, and I was confronted with the story of the Bible, you know, of God put on my heart, like, okay, you're going to walk your faith out right now. Like, you're really going to show, what do I really believe? And the way I got through that was I had this moment of like, wait a minute, think about when Jesus died on the cross. How do you think everyone felt that day? How do you think all those people felt? I'm like, their Savior just died. Their hope was put on a cross. So do you really think that that is worse than what you're feeling? And I felt like, I was like, wow, I can't imagine what that felt like. That must have been so heartbreaking. And then 3 days later was the biggest story in history. And he rose again and he was victorious. And in that moment, I was like, it doesn't matter what happens in my life. It feels like my Olympic career died. And technically it did. It was over. It was never going to come back. I wasn't going to redo it. All I had to do was trust that if the biggest failure in the history of the Bible happened, and then the biggest victory happened 3 days later, then there's victory for me. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's 3 years later, 3 days, 3 months later, but seeing that story, if I really believe that, then I have to believe that's going to happen in my life. So I went from experiencing that grieving and death and heartbreak of this is no longer part of my life anymore, but it will be resurrected into something even better. So, yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. So it's a good way to end right there. I just did a podcast interview with Coach Jim Harshaw, who used to be the head coach at University of Virginia, and he has an awesome podcast, Success Through Failure. And he talks about that, you know, the failures that we have and the heartbreaks we have and how those things eventually come into success. And that's exactly what, you know, what you just stated. So and the way your life has transitioned and God has worked in it. And then now, kind of full circle, it's weird how that works, but kind of full circle, here you are back now getting to work with Olympians and help mold, like I said earlier, the elite and the upcoming elite, right? You're getting to mold them. And hindsight's 2020, but in the midst of it, we have no idea that those things are going to happen. So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, this has been, a great interview with Coach Jessica Medina. Coach, I want to thank you for being on. Thank you for all that you do, for the example that you're setting, and not just in the world of women's wrestling, right? In the world of wrestling in general. And then just the way you walk out your faith and the way that you live your values every single day. I appreciate that. And I'm grateful that you took the time to jump on here in this podcast.
No, thank you. And I'm glad that we're in that group together. It's encouraging. So appreciate you.
Absolutely. So, all right. Well, anyone that's listening, you know, if anything in this podcast episode touched your heart, make sure that you reach out, share it with somebody else, share the link. And then, hey, Coach, real quick before we go, how can people contact you or follow you? I mean, what's your social media handles or maybe an email address, whatever? I mean, how can people follow you?
Yeah, on Instagram, funky_gold_Medina, or Twitter, Medina Funky Gold. And then really, any parents or athletes that have questions have emailed me in the past at jmedina@usawrestling.org. So if I can be of help, that's how you can find me.
Okay. And then I will make sure I put those links on the show notes. And then I'll put some of your credentials and stuff down there in the show notes so people can see all those things and then contact you, because I know that there's a lot of young ladies that are going to be out there listening to this or up and coming in the wrestling world that will hear your story and be inspired.
Thanks. I hope so.
All right. Thank you so much. And for everybody listening, you know, may God bless you, shine his face upon you. And until next time, love y'all. Peace. Hey, before you go, I want to go ahead and direct you over to lanefrostbrand.com. This is my favorite clothing and apparel company. It's family owned and operated, and it is a championship company representing and honoring the late, great world champion bull rider, Lane Frost. Lane was an icon. He was one of my heroes growing up. So I'm proud every single time I put on that Lane Frost hat, every single time I put on one of those Lane Frost t-shirts, got the LF on it. I'm proud to represent. I think you will be too. Go check them out, lanefrostbrand.com.
Podcast complete. Now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins. Tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step. CSL rep.